All right, Shabbos, say good morning. Good morning. Let us begin. Begin by thanking all of our sponsors, excuse me, for this morning. Sure to thank our Talmud Torah sponsors for the month of Adar Beis, the Schwartzbaum family, for dedicating all the Shir Midrashos this month in memory of Rabbi Aaron Schwartzbaum, Aaron Yosef Ben Meir, Zichron Levracha. Lay a soul in the schus of her daughter, Ilana Bas Esther's successful surgery, complete refuah shalema, and a safe return of all of our hostages and success for all of our soldiers. Maya Hoffman, in memory of her father, Reuven Ben Emanuel, and the merit of Hatzlacha, health and joy for her entire family. Yoel and Sarah Kelman, in honor of the birth of their son, and in memory of Staff Sergeant David Sasuna Shemi Kom Damo. We also dedicate our learning, Le'ilui Nishmas, soldiers who have fallen in battle, Nadav Cohen and Sivan Weil. We hope that your neshamas will have an aliyah. We hope that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give all of our soldiers tremendous hatzlacha, bring all of our hostages home, b'shalom and b'karov. But with that, let us begin. We have an incredible, incredible daf ahead of us today. Today's daf is Lamed Gimel 33, and we are picking up Emir Hashem on Lamed Beis Amud Beis 32b, and I believe, if I remember correctly, we left off at Tashma, right? So that is 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 lines up from the bottom. Technically speaking, last word on the 13th line up from the bottom. But let's just pick up 12 lines of Tashma. So remember again, we are in the midst of a raging dispute. A raging dispute. What is a raging dispute? It's so raging that you forgot about it, right? And so it says, a raging dispute is, Tzar Bali Chaim. So the question is, the concept of, see, remember, I mentioned this yesterday, Tzar Bali Chaim has really two pieces. When we think about Tzar Bali Chaim, we normally think about inflicting harm upon animals. The truth is, there's another part of Tzar Bali Chaim, which is, I see an animal in distress, my obligation to remove or to alleviate or to address the distress of that animal. So that's the area of Tzar Bali Chaim that we're focusing on now. So specifically, I'm walking, I go ahead and I see Reuven's animal struggling underneath its load. So I have an obligation, the Torah calls it the obligation ultimately of prika, of unloading the animal. And again, then there's the concept of ti'ina. Now remember, the way that the Torah phrases prika is azov tazov, and then ti'ina, the reloading of the animal, hakim takim. So the machlokis over here now is Tzar Bali Chaim daraisa, or is it dirabanan? Just to orient ourselves a little bit, if we go with the idea that Tzar Bali Chaim is daraisa, let's just go with this idea for just a second. What's the makar? In other words, in order for something to be a mitzvah daraisa, generally, what do you need? A pasuk. So what's the pasuk that would say that Tzar Bali Chaim is daraisa? So again, the pasuk would be azov tazov. That would be the pasuk. In other words, that I'm walking along the road, I see my friend's animal struggling underneath its load. Excuse me, the Torah says, azov tazov. Why is there an obligation? Eitan, are you drinking soda at 5:45? Okay, I just want to make sure. Seltzer, all right, good. He's about to call his mother. I got nervous for a second. All right, good. So this is what happens when fathers have their kids early in the morning. You know, you never know what's going to happen. So remember again, so the pasuk that would be a mitzvah saseh d'oraisa would be azov tazov. I just want to point that out. The Gemara never explicitly mentioned that point, but actually Andre came over to me yesterday after the shir. He's like, the Gemara is saying that it's a mitzvah d'oraisa, but what's the pasuk? What's the pasuk that's being quoted? So that would be the makkah for this. Okay. So we'll say, now let's continue. Tashma. Peimas ovid kochav maso Yisrael. Interesting case over here. Let's say you have an animal belonging to a non-Jew, but it's carrying the load of a Jew. Okay. So the Gemara says, v'chadalta, you don't have an obligation to help out. All right. Interesting, right? So in other words, the animal belongs to the non-Jew. The merchandise belongs to the Jew. The animal was struggling underneath its load. I don't have an obligation to help out. Verse 1 second. Now, 1 second, but we spoke this yesterday. If Tzar Bali Chaim is daraisa, then what? It doesn't matter who owns the animal. In other words, Jewish ownership, non-Jewish ownership. We'll say, remember again, this is not a din in the religious status or personal piety of the animal, right? This is an idea that there's an obligation to alleviate animal suffering. Who cares? By the way, I'll take it a step further. They would also apply to an animal of Hefker. Even if no one owned the animal, right? Lamai says, so obviously, this must mean that Tzar Bali Chaim is not the Raisa. To which the Gemara says, no. The Olam, Tzar Bali Chaim Daraisa. In reality, Tzar Bali Chaim is Daraisa. Hasam Bitiina. Bosei, that's talking about a case of reloading the animal, right? Remember again, Bosei, by reloading, there's no Tzar Bali Chaim, right? So, therefore, the saying over here is, if you have the animal of a non-Jew with merchandise of a Jew, I'm not obligated to help the non-Jew reload his donkey. Or I'm using donkey as the example. So Mar says, yeah, okay, if that's the case, Ema Seifa, look at the end of that price. What happens if you have the animal of a Jew and Masoi, merchandise of a non-Jew, Azov Tazov, you should help. So the Mar says, one second, the Ibatina Amai Azov Tazov, but again, at the end of the day, if Lamaisa talking about reloading the animal, why do I have an obligation to help reload? To which the Gemara says, "Mishum tzara di Yisrael," because of the tzara of the Jew. Since the Jew ultimately, it's the Jewish donkey, right? The Jew owns the donkey, and he's responsible for transporting the merchandise. If he doesn't get help in reloading his donkey, he's going to be upset. So step in order to alleviate a Jew's upsetness. Ihachi, if that's the case, I feel a reishanami. So I must say, if that's the case, that I don't want a Jew to be in distress, so I should have to step in the first case also. Because what's the first case? Jewish merchandise, non-Jewish donkey. So I'll say, so again, if no one's there, if I don't step in to help reload the donkey, isn't the Jew going to be upset as well? Reisha b'chamra oved kochavim, seifa b'chamra Yisrael. We'll say the Reisha is talking about where the donkey driver is not Jewish, and the second part is talking about where the donkey driver is Jewish. So therefore, again, in a case where the donkey driver is not Jewish, and even though the merchandise is Jewish, I don't have an obligation to go ahead and step in to help with Ti'ina. When the merchandise is non-Jewish, but the donkey driver is Jewish, I have an obligation to step in for Ti'ina in order to alleviate any Jewish distress. So the Gemara says, my Pascha. So here's what's interesting. What the Gemara is presupposing is, if the Jew is owned by a donkey, right? If the donkey is owned by the Jew, right, then that must mean that the donkey driver is Jewish. And if the donkey is owned by the non-Jew, that must mean that the donkey driver is not Jewish. So the Gemara says, my Pascha, why do you make that assumption? It's very simple. Stama de Milsa, Inish Basar Chamrei Azel. We'll say the assumption is that the owner of the donkey is going to be the one who's leading it. So therefore, again, I will say, in a case where you have a non-Jewish donkey, Bepashtos is going to be the non-Jewish owner who's there. And therefore, again, when it comes to Ti'ina, I don't have an obligation to step in there, even if it's Jewish merchandise. When it's a Jewish donkey owner, the assumption is it is the Jew who is leading the donkey. And therefore, for Ti'ina purposes, I have an obligation to go ahead and step in and help out, even with non-Jewish merchandise. Okay, I will say, now I'll point out, by the way, in that line, it's a very profound line over here as well. Stama de Milsa, I will say, the way the world works is Inish Basar Chamrei Azel. I will say, a person generally tends to follow his Chumrius. Chumrius also means my material side. I will say, that at the end of the day, people are very impacted by their Gashmius, by their Chumrius. And this, by the way, is not a condemnation, it's a reality. The reality is, for most of us in life, in order for my Ruchnius, in order for me to work on my Ruchnius, I have to know that my Gashmius is in order. This is why, in general, if you look at the beginning, let's say, for example, Parshas Bechukosai, like the Torah says, Im Bechukosai Terechum Mitzasai Tishmoru, Kodesh Baruch Hu says, if you follow in my ways, listen to my Torah. So it's interesting. The Torah then outlines a whole bunch of material rewards. And it's interesting, right? Because here, the Torah seems to be saying, if you go out and you follow HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you'll get material rewards. What's the Pshat? The Pshat is going to say, Aruch Chaim HaKadosh brings down. He says, not material rewards. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, I understand that in order for you to work on your Ruchnius, in order for you to work on your spirituality, your material needs need to be met. It's the derech of man. Stama de milsa inish basar chamrei azil. The general disposition is a person follows his gashmius. He follows his chumrius. If my gashmius, if I can pay my bills, right, and I'm able to take care of myself materially, then I have the bandwidth to focus on my spirituality. But without that material comfort, or material, again, sometimes it's difficult to be able to know that I can focus on my ruchni. It's an incredible yisod. Let's go weiter. I will say, but one second. But if the chadalta v'azov is also talking about prika, so the Gemara says, Amar lei, hamani Rabbi Yosei Lili. Whose opinion is this, Rabbi Yosei Lili? The Amar, sar bali chayim lav doraisa. So Rabbi Yosei, the Gemara is suggesting, whose opinion is being reflected over here? Rabbi Yosei Lili, who holds that Tzar Bali Chaim is not Daraisa. Okay? So it was an incredible Gemara. Tashma. Ohev lifrok v'soni liton. It was an incredible, incredible Gemara. Let's say I have in front of me two donkeys. One donkey is owned by my friend. One donkey is owned by my enemy. My friend's donkey needs prika. My enemy's donkey needs ti'ina. Now, let's take a step back for just a second, right? So remember, in prika ti'ina, which one is going to have the higher level of Tzar Bali Chaim? Prika, right? Remember again, there's really no Tzar Bali Chaim in Ti'ina. That's why, remember again, in the Mishnah, we even have an opinion that says that you can go ahead and halacha l'maisa charge money for Ti'ina, right? In other words, that I can say I'm happy to help, but I'm going to get paid for that. So l'maisa, again, I've also listened to this case. So two donkeys in front of me right now. My friend's donkey needs prika, so it's buckling underneath its load. My enemy's donkey needs ti'ina, needs to be reloaded. So what do? So the Gemara says, mitzvah besone, help out your enemy. Help out your enemy, right? In other words, help out your enemy with ti'ina. Why? Kedei lokof es yitzro. It will say, in order to go ahead and literally subdue your yetzer, or subjugate your yetzer. Meaning, what it will say, since in helping my enemy, I'm overcoming some internal obstacle within myself, right? I dislike a Jew. I did, which I would say is a capital crime. It's literally a capital crime to go ahead. I mean, not literally a capital crime, but you understand, metaphorically a capital crime to hate another Jew. So if I have the opportunity to overcome that hate, to overcome that animosity, then you take that. So we'll say now. If Tzar Bali Chaim is Doraisa, we'll say, then what? Then you have to help the animal. You have to help the animal of your friend With prika, that should take precedence. To which the Gemara says, "Afilu hachi." No, Tzar Bali Chaim is daraisa. But even though Tzar Bali Chaim is daraisa, kedei lokov es yitzro adif. The Rebbe says there is no greater accomplishment in this world than the ability to overcome your yetzer. The Rebbe says, "Wow, wow." So again, the Rebbe says, even though Tzar Bali Chaim is daraisa. And because Tzar Bali Chaim is daraisa, therefore there should be an obligation to go and help out my friend's donkey, because that's the one that's struggling underneath its load. Even with all that, there is nothing greater in this world than overcoming your yetzahara. The Rebbe say, do you hear this line of the Gemara? Kedei lakov es yitzro adif. The Rebbe say, what that means is, when I struggle with something, and we all struggle with something, whether it's an aveira, whether it's a behavior, now, not every negative behavior is necessarily an aveira, but all of us have certain behaviors which I know hold me back from self-actualization. The greatest accomplishment in life is when you overcome your yetzer. That is the, we'll say, but not only that, that's not new to us. What's new to us? That's even greater than fulfilling a mitzvah's asei d'oraisa. Isn't that incredible? Overcoming your yetzer is even greater than the fulfillment of a biblical precept. V'haraya, my friend's animal is struggling underneath its load. My enemy's animal needs to be reloaded. Reload your enemy's animal. But Tzar Bali Chaim is daraisa. So there's a mitzvah daraisa to help my friend, not my enemy. You're right. But by helping your enemy, you overcome your yetzer, and there is no greater accomplishment in this world than overcoming your desires for something that is not appropriate. Incredible, Rabbi said. The hallmark of personalistic accomplishment is the ability to want something, to lust for something, to do something that is inappropriate, and then to overcome that desire. That is the pinnacle of personalistic accomplishment. Incredible. Tashma. Sone shamru, sone yisrav, lo sone ovdei kochavim. So, by the way, the sone they were talking about is talking about a Jew that I don't like, but not a non-Jew. Not a non-Jew. So, one second. If you hold that halacha l'maisa, That Tzar Bala Chem is Daraisa. What does it matter who the enemy is? So the Gemara says, Mi Savrit Asoni Dekra Kai, Asoni Demasnisin Kai. No, no, Gemara says, No, don't think we're talking about the enemy of the Pasuk, rather, which was talking about Prika, we're talking about the enemy of the Braisa, which is talking about Te'ino. Okay, Tashma. Let's go back there, Bosai. Top of Lamed Gimel. 33a. We'll see some great cases here. Rovates velo raftson. So again, we'll remember again, Lashon of the Pasuk is, I'm walking down the road, and I see my friend's donkey, Rovates tachas maso'o. Now, we'll say, now, Rovates means, ultimately again, that this is episodic. This is episodic. I see my friend's donkey struggling underneath its burden, below raftson, but not an animal that is like habitually struggling underneath its burden. The Gemara says, Rovates velo omed. Furthermore, I see the animal buckling and not standing up straight. Masa'o, I see it underneath its burden. Velo mefurak. And we're not talking about, ultimately, again, te'ina. They both say, now watch this. Tachas masa'o, underneath its burden. The Gemara says, shiyachol lamod bo. We're talking about a burden that the animal is capable of holding. Well, so you saw this in the Mishnah already, this opinion that says that if the owner of the animal overloaded the animal with a load that it's not really capable of shouldering, and the animal is buckling underneath that, I don't have an obligation to step in. So the Gemara says, but 1 second. Mali rovets, mali raftson, mali omeid. So I'll say, so remember again, this doesn't make sense. If you hold, that's, or I'll say, it's almost like, you know, if the scenario is like this, you help. If it's not like this, you don't help. I don't understand. If Tzar Bali Chaim is Daraisa Bosai, then all of this is very simple, right? What's the halacha? You see a struggling animal, help. That's it. In other words, there's no qualifications. It's a habitual buckler. It's not habitual. It's an episodic buckler. It's a recreational buckler, right? Sometimes it's there. Sometimes it's this. Sometimes it's this. There's no qualifications. If Tzar Bali Chaim is Daraisa, if the animal is struggling, you step in and you help. So the Gemara says, Hamanar Biosek Lili. So we'll see, you're right. This reflects another school of thought. It's Rabbi Yosef Glili, Da'amar Tzar Bali Chaim Drabanan. Rabbi Yosef Glili holds. So we'll say this. Remember again, we know this from yesterday's daf. This is a machlokas. It's Tzar Bali Chaim Drabanan, Tzar Bali Chaim Daraisa. Rabbi Yosef Glili holds it's Drabanan. So Moritz Haganayim, Tzar, this seems to be clear. Diktani, Tachas Masa'o, Masui Shiyachol Lamorbo. Because also the Braisa said, when the Pasuk says, you see your friend's donkey buckling underneath its burden. Maso means its burden. And Rabbi Yosef Lili Paskin, sorry, and the Braisa says, it means a burden that the animal is capable of shouldering. Man shamaslei de isle hai svara. So Rabbi Yosef, who holds of this svara? That you're only obligated to step in and help out in a case where the animal is shouldering a burden that it is capable of holding. Rabbi Yosef Haglili, Shmamina. So I'll say, we saw this again. Remember in the Mishnah already, we saw this view ascribed to Rabbi Yosef Haglili. Umi matzis mokmus like Rabbi Yosef Haglili. But how can you really say this? Rabbi Yosef Haglili. V'hakatani, but I will say, but we learned, v'hakatani seifa, tachas masa'o v'lo mefurak. He will say, when are you obligated to help? When the animal is struggling underneath its burden, but not when the burden is sitting next to the animal. They both say, now, what does that sound like? My love, mefurak. So both say, so ultimately, again, my love, mefurak. So the Gemara says, my lo mefurak. Ilei ma lo mefurak klal. So both say, if we say that it's talking about where the burden is not off the animal, so haksiv hakim takimimo. Then they both say, that would be tina. Ela pshita lo mefurak bechinam ela bischar. Rather, I will say what it means is I'm not obligated to do te'ina for free, but I'm obligated to do te'ina, but I can ask for compensation. Man shamas lady is lehai sivara. So I will say, so ultimately, again, who holds that you can ask for payment for te'ina? That's the Rabbanan. To which the Gemara says, you're right. The olam Rabbi Yosef Halilihi. In reality, the Brice reflected the view of Rabbi Yosef Halilihi. Ube te'ina savala ki Rabbanan. But I will say, so again, Rabbi Yosef Halilihi is the opinion that says, Tachas Masa'o means I'm only obligated to help out the animal, to help unload the animal, if the animal is holding a burden that it is capable of shouldering. If the owner overloaded it, I am not obligated to step in. That's Rabbi Yosef Halili. Rabbi Yosef Halili holds like the Rabbanan by Tina, so he'll hold that by Prika, you're obligated to unload the animal for free. But by Te'ina, you're obligated to step in, but you're also entitled to ask for compensation. Okay, fascinating. So, Tan Rabbanan. So we'll say, let's go back there. Kisira, if you will see. So the Gemara says, Yachal afilu me'rachok. So we'll say, by the way, what's the halacha? How do we paskin? We paskin, tsar balei chayim is doraisa. That's how we paskin. And the Bo say, because we paskin tsar balei chayim doraisa, so therefore, again, all of these other qualifications don't really apply. So for argument's sake, I'm walking down the road, I see Reuven's donkey buckling underneath its load, even if it's clear that Reuven overloaded that donkey. So in other words, there's no way the donkey could. So in other words, once you hold this doraisa, Bo say, so then all of these other qualifications and all these cases kind of go out the window. But that is how we paskin. That's how the Rambam paskins. That ultimately, again, tsar balei chayim is doraisa. And again, I will say, now here's what's interesting. The Rambam doesn't tell you why it's doraisa. The Kesef Mishnah, and I will say, this is in Parak Yud Gimel of Hilchos Rotseach Ushmiras Nefesh. So again, the Rambam, so the Kesef Mishnah quotes, and the Kesef Mishnah says that halacha l'maisa, we learn out from the pasuk of Azov Ta'azov Imo. That's the mucker. The fact that the Torah tells me that if I'm walking down the road and I see my friend's donkey rovets tachas maso, buckling underneath his burden, azov tazov imo, help out the animal. Why? Again, that's the mukar, that's the source, that tsar balei chayim is da'oraisa. Okay, beautiful. Tan rabbanon, kisira. So we'll say, so now some other qualifications in this halacha. Kisira, yachal afilu me'rachok. So we'll say, so the lashon of the pasuk is, you will see, kisira chamor sonacha, rovets tachas maso, vechadalta, me'azov lo azov tazovimo. Fine. So we'll say, so the lashon of the pasuk is, you will see your friend's donkey struggling underneath its burden. So the Gemara says, yachal afilu me'rachok. You might have thought that you're obligated to, what happens, like we'll say, you have very good eyesight. So you see the donkey at a very far distance. You might have thought that you're obligated to help. Talmud lomar kisifka. So we'll say, the pasuk says, kisifka. Now kisifka literally means you'll encounter. Now paga really is a lashon of like close encounter. Close encounter. So kisira could mean like a long distance. Kisifka, both are shown us over here, sounds like a very close encounter. So the Gemara says, "I kisifka yachal pigia mamish." So Rabbi says, if it were to say kisifka, you would have thought that means that what? That literally you're bumping into the animal. Tamu lomar kisira. Therefore, the pasuk says, "When you will see ve'izo hiri'ia sheish papigia." So therefore, Rabbi says, when you take these two concepts together, essentially what it means is like this: even though you're not mamish bumping into the animal, it's not a close encounter, but at the same time you're seeing it in a relatively close proximity. So what's a re'ia? That's a pigia. Right? What's seeing something that is a relatively close proximity? Shi'uro chachamim echad mishava u'mechza b'mil. So we'll say Chazal estimated this literally at 2/15 of a mil. 2/15 of a mil. So we'll say, so just to give you an idea, 2/15 of a mil is 266 amos, which is approximately 500 feet. 500 feet. So if that animal is about, I'm sorry? Is that what it's from here to Smith Avenue?
From here to Smith.
Yeah, five. Okay, good. So I'll say, so 500 feet. So 500 feet, right? If you go ahead and you see that animal within a proximity of 500 feet, that's considered to be a re'ia, that's a pigia. So I could see it and it's close enough that I should step in and help. So the Gemara says, v'zehu ris. The Gemara identifies this as the distance of a ris. Okay. So Gemara says, Tana, umedad imo ad parsa. Now I will say, this is a fascinating halacha that the Gemara is just introducing us to, which is that after you load up the animal, incredible, after you load up the animal, so we'll say, up until now, we've always assumed that the mitzvah of, so this prika, which we've been focusing on, and then there's ti'ina, right? A separate mitzvah to help reload the animal. We've always assumed that after you reload the animal, you're done. Now the Gemara says, by the way, there's an additional piece to the mitzvah, which is after you reload the animal, medad imo ad parsa. You have to go ahead and literally walk, Rashi says, medad imo la'achar shit ino shemiyachsar v'yipo. After you reload the animal, you have to accompany the animal for a little while. Ad parsa. I must say, the truth is, the parsa is actually not such a little while. Parsa is 4 mil, which is approximately 8,000 amos. That's actually not an insignificant distance. You're obligated to walk alongside the animal. Amar Rav Bar Bar Chana v'notel schar. But you're allowed to ask for payment for that. In other words, we both say, so that is a big investment. So in other words, not only am I obligated to reload the animal, but what? You have to go ahead and accompany it for a little while. to make sure that it's steady now with its newly reloaded merchandise, right? But to be clear, I'll say, whereas we paskin that for Ti'ina, you can't ask for repayment, right? You can't ask for payment, right? For pre-cantina or tremissos dies, so you don't ask to get payment. But for accompanying the animal afterwards to make sure that it's steady on its feet, for that, ultimately, again, you get paid. Now, remember, again, I will say, how do you get paid? So that goes back to yesterday's daf or Shabbos's daf. Beginning of yesterday's daf. Kipoel batel. Right? So you don't necessarily get your full salary. You'll get like Paul Bach, like we discussed yesterday. I will say, there's also a tremendous Moshe Haskel in this Gemara of Medad Imo Ad Parsa. You know, I will say, the whole Rabbi Nachman has a beautiful Torah on this where he writes that the whole idea of these psukim of Kisira Chamorson Acha Rovitz Tachas Masao Azov Tazov Lo, Rabbi Nachman also sees in these psukim an incredible metaphor to help out each other when we are struggling. That sometimes, you know, you walk along the road of life and you see someone else struggling with their life load. And in life, it is so easy to say, you know what? I've got my own stuff going on. I don't have time. I don't have time for this. And the Torah says, Azov Tazov Imo. If you see another Yid struggling, you see someone else buckling underneath their pressures and underneath their difficulties of life, step in. Step in, I will say. And here's the incredible part. When do you step in? Don't wait until they fall down. Right? Don't wait until their legs give out from under them. Don't wait until they're literally lying on the ground underneath the weight of the load. As soon as you see them struggling, step in and help out. And I will say, so now what do you do when you help out? Sometimes you have to help a person unload their life baggage. And then what do you do afterwards, I will say? You help them reload. You help them reload. Because as we know, the way the baggage of life works is, rarely do you get to fully dispose of your life baggage. Just sometimes you have to unload it in order to reload it and keep going with it. There's some baggage, I will say, that is with us throughout all of life. It's just a question of how you know, it's kind of like when, so you ever pack up your car? You know, you have to pack up all the baggage and you realize you pack up the car and you didn't pack it right. So what do you need to do? You have to take everything out and repack it again in a way that everything fits. Sometimes vacations are a wonderful metaphor for life. Because I will say, sometimes in life, all the baggage has to come with you. You just have to figure out how to repack it in a way that allows you to travel forward. So Rabbi Nachman sees in this an incredible metaphor for how we help each other. But I will say, this last piece is so profound. This last piece is, I will say, sometimes in life, we help people in moments of crisis, and then we go away, and then we disappear. It's important to know that sometimes when people need help most is not just in the reloading and getting up, but in taking the first initial steps forward in life. I'll give you just a simple mushel of this. You know, we'll say, no one has to explain to us the mitzvah and the importance of nichum aveilim, right? Whether it's helping a minyan, right? Whether it's helping a minyan in a beis avel or just showing up to visit. You know, we'll say, sometimes the greatest chesed you could do for someone is calling them on the day after Shiva. Because we'll say Shiva is an incredible experience where you're blanketed by love. People are coming, people are going, there's food, there's minyanim, there's this. I will say, you should just know that very often the feelings of loneliness when Shiva is over, right? After the chairs are picked up, the Aron Kodesh is gone, and often people, because everybody then goes on with life. Everybody goes on with life. Meanwhile, this person who just encountered loss now has to take new steps in a new reality, in a new life. And often that support system, that support network that was so there and so present for the last 7 days is not there. It's not intentionally, chas v'shalom, right? But people figured, okay, you know, shit was over, let's go. We're on to the next thing. And meanwhile, again, so as a community, we help this person who just went ahead and encountered loss, we help them reload, so to speak. But now they're taking their first steps in this new life. And Rahman, sometimes you're taking it all alone. I'll say it's a wonderful practice to think about that if you know someone who's sitting Shiva, of course, be there during Shiva. But make sure to pick up the phone on the day that they get up or on the day after they get up. Umedade imo ad parsa. We have to be there for each other. When you know that someone is taking a step in a new chapter, in a new tekufa of life, and maybe they're a little bit shaky on their feet, make sure to be there for them. Make sure to be there with them as they take those initial first steps. Incredible. Says the Mishnah. All right, Rabbi Osai, you thought it was good until now. Just wait. Says the Gemara. Avedasav, Avedasaviv. Rabbi Osai, watch this. I lose an object and my father lost an object. What's the halacha? Avedasav kodemes. Ultimately, again, my Avedas first. My Avedas first. In other words, we'll say, we've seen this before, that halacha lemaisa chayecha komen, the same way that my physical life comes first, my material life comes first as well. We'll talk about this more in just a bit. Avedasav avedas rabo, shelo kodem. Similarly, I lost an object, my Rebbe lost an object. I have a right to go ahead and find my object before my Rebbe's. We'll say, watch these Gemaras. Avedas avev avedas rabo. But we'll say, what happens if my father lost an object and my Rebbe lost an object? Shel Rabo Kodemes. I have an obligation to find my Rebbe's object first. Why? Such a beautiful Gemara. Sha'aviv heviu le'olam hazeh, ve'rabo shalom do chachma meviu le'chaya olam haba. Because my father is responsible for bringing me into this world. But my Rebbe who taught me wisdom. Now, we're going to have to see what that line means. My Rebbe who taught me wisdom brings me to the world to come. So Rabbi Osei, so an incredibly profound Gemara, and this sets up a halachic hierarchy. So the Rabbi Osei, therefore again, when I have a conflict between the covet between my Rebbe and the covet between my father, the covet to my Rebbe wins out, right? So this is, so therefore again, my Rebbe lost an object, my father lost an object, I return. Now, who is a Rebbe? We'll have to see in the Gemara. Like, who is this talking about? We'll see in the Gemara. But my father lost an object, my Rebbe lost an object, I spend the time returning my Rebbe's object first. Why? My father, I owe him unbridled hakaras hatov. Why? Because he brought me into this world. But my Rebbe is responsible for bringing me to the world to come. Vim aviv chacham shal aviv kodemes. Now, if my father is a talmid chacham, then ultimately, again, then my father takes precedence. Because Rabbi said the assumption is that what? That my father is both my Rebbe and my father. And my father, it's interesting, Rabbi Osei, the way the Gemara phrases it is if my father is a chacham, doesn't really, it says over here, yeah, so, right, shakel, kind shakel k'neged Rabbi, all right, so there's a lot to discuss here. It doesn't say that my father taught me Torah, it just says that my father is a talmid chacham, but it's almost like the default assumption is, if my father is a talmid chacham, my father certainly taught me Torah, in which case, my father is my father and my Rebbe. Incredible. Haya ave v'rabo no sin masui. We'll say, if my father and my Rebbe are both carrying a burden, carrying merchandise, and they need help, maniach ashar abav yachach maniach ashar aviv. I help my Rebbe first, and then I help my father. Haya ave v'rabo beis hashevi. If my father and my Rebbe were both in captivity, po de'es rabo v'achachach po de'es aviv. I'll say, very dramatic Gemara. Right? You redeem your Rebbe first, and then you redeem your father. Vim aviv chacham, but if my father is a talmud chacham, po de'es aviv v'acharkach po de'es rabo. So we'll say, so once again, you see that caveat. If my father is a talmud chacham, then ultimately, again, my father has the status of my father and my Rebbe. So I'll redeem my father first, and then my Rebbe. Rabbi Osei, incredible. So let's analyze this. Menahani Mili. So Rabbi Osei, let's start. Now, Rabbi Osei, the first thing we're starting with over here is the concept that if anyone else, right, if my monetary or my material concerns come before anyone else's, whether it's my father or it's my Rebbe, so we're saying, Menahani Mili, where do we know this from? Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. So Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. Amar Kra, Efes, Ki lo ye becha evyon. We'll say, so that's on Shabbos. The pasuk says only there will not be with you any paupers. Now, both say that now the way the Gemara is actually that pasuk is efes lo ye becha evyon. The idea over here is that there should be no poverty with you becha, which means your financial concerns come before anyone else's financial concerns, and therefore halacha lemaisa again, I'm allowed to look for my object before anyone else's object. I'm allowed to say, that's why, again, I'm allowed to address my own losses before anyone else's losses. Shalcha kodem l'shel kol adam. I will say, my financial needs, my material needs, come before anyone else's. We'll say, incredible, Gemara, listen to this. Va'amrav Yehuda amrav, kala mekayim ba'atzmo, kach, sof sof boli dekach. Gemara says, but if you actually live this way, you'll become impoverished. Listen, now, what does this mean? This is an incredible Gemara. They'll say, there are certain things that are mutter, but it doesn't mean you should do it. So is it mutter to always place your own financial needs first? Absolutely. Absolutely it's mutter. But just know, if you actually live this way, Rabbi Osei, if you actually live this way, this is a terrible way to live. An absolutely terrible way to live. Ultimately, again, a person who lives this way will become an evyon, will ultimately become impoverished. Rabbi Osei, it may not mean materially impoverished. Right? It could be that you have all your money. Rabbi Osei, but a person who lives life only looking out for himself, worrying about his own needs, always above everyone else's, such a person will absolutely unequivocally become an evyon. Maybe not materially, but certainly spiritually and certainly morally. You have every right to look out for your own needs first. But a person who lives that way, a person who lives a selfish life, even though it's a halachically sanctioned selfish life, they'll say, that's not a life. It might be mutter. But it's absolutely unequivocally wrong. And you will become an evyon. You will become poor. Again, maybe not materially, but absolutely morally and spiritually. Incredible Gemara. Hayu avi v'rabo nosin masui. So we'll say again, if my father and my Rebbe were both carrying a load, so the obligation is to first go ahead and help out my Rebbe. Tana rabbanan. So we'll say, so now obviously, the million-dollar question in this is, what's the definition of a Rebbe? Who are we talking about over here? Tana rabbanan. Rabbi Shalamdu Chachma. Shabbos say, it's the Rebbe who taught me Chachma. Rabbi say, wisdom. Rabbi say, interesting, we're going to see, what is wisdom? Gemara. Amazing. Gemara. Again, we're going to define that in just a little bit. V'lo Rabbi Shalamdu Mikra U'Mishnah D'Remer. Remer says, it's not the Rebbe who taught you Chumash, or who taught you, or Mikra merely means Tanakh. It's not the Rebbe who taught you Tanakh, or not the Rebbe who taught you Mishnah. But rather, it's the Rebbe who taught you wisdom. Wisdom being Gemara. Gemara, Rebbe Yehuda Omer, Kol Shorov Chachmas Amenu. Rebbe Yehuda says, it's the Rebbe who you got the majority of your knowledge from. That's who it is. Majority of your knowledge. We'll say, whatever, so in other words, it's interesting because whereas Rebbe Meir looks at it from a subject perspective, right? Your Rebbe in life is the Rebbe who teaches you Gemara. How much Gemara you learn is almost irrelevant. The Rebbe from whom you learn Gemara, that is your Rebbe. Interesting enough, Rebbe Huda understands it more almost like as a quantitative idea. Who is the person from whom you've absorbed the majority of your knowledge? That is your Rebbe. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Afilu Oher Einav Ela B'Mishnah Achos Zehu Rabbo. Rabbi Yossi says, Rebbe is incredible. Rebbe is anyone whom you learned any amount of knowledge from. So Rabbi Yossi, it's also interesting, right? Because according to Rabbi Meir, you have one Rebbe, right? That's the Rebbe who teaches you Gemara. Rabbi Huda, one Rebbe. The Rebbe from whom you got the majority of your knowledge. Rabbi Yossi, multiple Rebbeim. Pretty much anyone who's ever taught you any knowledge, ultimately, again, is your Rebbe. Amar Rava, Kigon Rav Schora, Da'azbaran Zuma Listerun. So we'll say, so Rava gives an example of this. He gives an example of Rav Schora. Rav Schora, we'll say, taught them about Zuhara Listerun. So we'll say, this is in Seder Taras. They were learning about a particular utensil. No one knew what the utensil was. And Rav Schora was the one who said that this concept of Zuma Listerun is a spoon that you use to remove froth from a pot of soup or from a pot of food. Shmuel Karamane Ale Haumir Abanan De Azbere Echad Yore La'amas Ashechi Ve'achar Posech. Shmuel Tor Kriya. When the Tam Tchachem Utarabo say, again, there's a Mishnah Meseches Tamid that talks about how the Kohanim would open up the door. One of the doors, Rabbi Osei, had to be opened up from the inside. So what they would do is that one of the Kohanim would insert his arm up until the armpit and then would open the door from the inside of the door. So again, there was a particular time to explain this to Shmuel, and ultimately Shmuel went ahead and Shmuel tore Kriya when he passed away. So the Gemara says, Amar Ula, Tamidi Chacham Shevet Bavel, Omdim Zem Mipnei Zeh. Tamidi Chacham and Bavel stand up for each other. Stand up for each other. V'korin Zeh Al Zeh. And ultimately they tear Kriya for one another when they pass away. When they pass away. Ula Inyan Aveda, the makom aviv einon chozun ela l'rabo mufhak. So Rabbi said, this is incredible. So in Bavel, as much as the Talmidei Chachamim give kavod to one another, right? They go ahead and they stand up for each other. They tear kriya for one another. But when it comes to a lost object and there's a conflict between a Rebbe and the father, they define Rebbe as rabo mufhak, as primary Rebbe. Now Rabbi said, even in that, I just want to point out, what is the definition of Rabba Mufak? Is Rabba Mufak like Rabbi Meir, the person who teaches you Gemara? Or is it like Rabbi Huda? Ultimately, again, the person from whom you've acquired the majority of your knowledge. So those are the two primary definitions in Rabba Mufak. The Kabbai Mini Rav Chista, Mini Rav Huna, Talmud Vitzarech Lo, Rabba Meir, both said incredible Gemara over here. So it comes along Rav Chista. Rav Chista asks from Rav Huna, right? Kabbai Mini Rav Chista, Rav Huna. What happens if there's a Talmud, but the Rebbe needs the Talmud? Now let's say, now what does this mean? This is actually a very profound idea. If you look at Rashi, Rashi says over here, three lines down in the wide lines of Rashi. So ultimately, again, you have a Rebbe, but the Rebbe leans very heavily on a Talmud, either for past teachings or for teachings of other opinions. So what is the status of that Rebbe for this Talmud? Is that still considered to be is the Rebbe still considered to be the Rabba Mufak or not? So this is incredible. So Rav Chista asked this question to Rav Huna. Now Rav Huna was Rav Chista's Rebbe. Rav Chista asked this of Rav Huna, and Rav Huna got offended because Rav Huna thought that Rav Chista was talking about himself, and that Rav Chista was inferring that Rav Huna needs Rav Chista. So Amar Lei Chista Lo Tzarich Nalach. So Rav Huna says, Chista, I want to be clear. I don't need you. At tzrichas li ad arba in shnin. But you need me for another 40 years. So ikbidi ahadadi. So we'll say they got angry at each other. Follow aili legabe hadadi. And they stopped visiting one another. That's incredible. So the Gemara says, Yosef Rav Chista arba in tanisa mishum dechalosh daite de Rav Huna. Rav Chista fasted 40 fast days because he upset Rav Huna. Yosef Rav Huna arba in tanisa mishum dechashte de Rav Chista. And Rav Huna fasted 40 fast days because he was choshe, because he suspected Rav Chista of being disrespectful. So we'll say, now what's tragic in this story, we'll say, is, did they reconcile? Because the Gemara just says they did not visit each other. So did they reconcile? Didn't they reconcile? So the Gemara doesn't seem to indicate that. And I'll say, there's something even more important than fasting when you wrong someone. What's more important than fasting when you wrong someone? Reconcile. Apologize. Own it and move forward. I'll say, so often in life, we hurt someone, we offend someone, and kind of like we feel bad initially, then we justify, then we dig in, and then like we feel like in principle, I'm not going to go ahead and apologize. I would say there is nothing worse for Klal Yisrael than machlokas, and on the flip side, there is nothing better for Klal Yisrael than reconciliation. The ability to go ahead and just say, I'm sorry. The ability to go ahead and just, we all make mistakes, but to make amends, I will say the greatest personal schus, also the greatest schus for our people. So halacha is like Rabbi Huda. What's the meaning? Rabbi Huda says the definition of a Rebbe is the person from whom you've learned the majority of your wisdom. That's what we call Rabba Mufak, a Rebbe Mufak. That's where I've learned majority of my wisdom from. So the Gemara says, Ravacha bar Rav Huna, Amar Rav Sheshes, halach Rabbi Yossi. He'll say, halach is like Rabbi Yossi. And we'll say, Rabbi Yossi says that your Rebbe, not Rabba Mufak, but your Rebbe, is anyone who you learned anything from. He says, even the Mishnah, Omi Amar Rabbi Yochanan, did Rabbi Yochanan really say this? Omar Rabbi Yochanan, halacha, kistam Mishnah. But Rabbi Yochanan said, halacha is like kistam Mishnah. Utinan Rabbo Shalom Do Chachma. And the Mishnah said, Rabbo say, who is my Rebbe? That's the person who taught me Chachma. And what's Chachma? My Chachma, Rov Chachmaso. The majority of my wisdom, Rabbo say, which sounds like ultimately again, Rabbi Huda. What's the definition of Rabbo Mufak? Now, Rabbo say, again, remember, Rabbo Mufak in this context means this is the person who essentially I'm going to put on a pedestal even above my father. Above my father. That's the Rebbe who taught me the majority of the Torah that I know. So pretty much what comes out over here is we're left really with two primary opinions. That what's my Rabba Mufak? Either the person who taught me the majority of the knowledge that I have, or the person who teaches me Gemara. So those seem to be the two opinions that are winning out from amongst the spectrum of opinions over. So just keep those two in mind. Tarabanan. Haoskin b'mikra, mida ve'eno mida. So let's listen to this. People who learn mikra, Tanakh, it's good, but it's not so good. Rabbi say now, we'll look at Rashi this moment. Mida, Rashi says over here, hiktsas. So obviously learning Tanakh is good. Ve'ina mida, Rashi says, Shamishna gimara yafim imena, mipnei shetluyin begirso umishtachin shabiyimeyim lohaya gimara b'ksav. So let's listen to this. On one hand, learning Tanakh is good. Rabbi say, but there's a problem. What's the problem with just getting focused on Tanakh? So this is going to sound a bit strange, but Tanakh doesn't teach me what to do. I need halacha. And you're like, well, so without halacha, you can't be a Jew. Without halacha, you don't know what to do. But he says, so again, so on one hand, learning Tanakh is good. Learning Tanakh is good. But Lamaisa, there's also, don't get too caught up in the learning of Tanakh. So the Gemara says, Mida ve'ina mida, be Mishnah, Mida ve'not la'aschar. So also, obviously, if you learn Mishnah, it's good, and you get schar for it. Gemara, ein lecha mida gidola mizu. But also, there is nothing better than learning Gemara. I don't even need anyone to tell us this. Right? We live this every single day. There is nothing better than sitting down to a blot of Gemara. Ula olam, haviratz le-mishnah, yosem in ha-gemara. But Rabbi said, but always run to learn Mishnah more than Gemara. Rabbi says, okay, that made no sense. Ha-guf ha-kashya, amrit bi-gemara, ein l'chamid. Rabbi said, now by the way, before we resolve this, Rabbi said, I just want to understand, why does the Gemara say there's nothing better than Gemara? Because we want to say, understand. Okay, we learn at a little bit of a quicker pace. But Lamaisa, again, remember, everything is in Gemara. As Chazal tells us, hafach ba v'hafach ba dekula ba. Everything is in here. Right? Mikra, Tanakh is in here. Mishnah's in here. Analysis is in here. Halacha is in here. Hashkafa is in here. Musa is in here. Gemara represents one-stop shopping. Everything is here. That's why Chazal said there is nothing greater than Gemara. So now we have a problem. Hago fakasha. Amrit the Gemara in lechamid the gidolamizo. You told me there's nothing better than Gemara. Vahada amrit uli olam haveratz leMishnah yosem in haGemara. And then you told me run to Mishnah more than Gemara. So which one is it? Should I do Mishnah? Should I do Gemara? So it's an incredible Gemara over here. Amr Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan. So on days. Amr Rabbi Yochanan. Bimei Rabbi Nishnas Mishnah Zu. Wow. They both say this was said in the days of Rebbe. What happened in the days of Rebbe? Kula, so Gemara says, Kula Alma Masnis, sorry, Shafko Kula Alma Masnisim, Va'azlu Basar Gemara. They both say, listen to this. In the days of Rebbe, they both say, just to point out, Rebbe, just to give you context, they both say, Rebbe was born about 135 CE, right? So about 60 years after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. So it's important, that's when he's born. So it's important just to give a little bit of historical context, because as we're going to see, actually, and again, we'll see what we have time for today, but Rashi gives us a whole history lesson over here, which is incredibly important. So we'll say, in the days of Rebbe, they said this. What happened in the days of Rebbe? Was in the days of Rebbe, they were Masada the Gemara. They established the Gemara. When they established the Gemara, there was incredible excitement about Gemara. And I will say, here's what's interesting. We find Gemara sometimes very confusing, and doesn't necessarily give us like a clear pathway to halacha. So I was like, can you imagine what learning looked like before Gemara? Right? Before Gemara, how confusing things were. So when Gemara came, there was an incredible excitement about Gemara. Everyone ran to Gemara. What do? They forgot about Mishnah. So therefore, Rebbe taught, run to Mishnah more than Gemara. So Rebbe was concerned that Mishnah was being forgotten, and therefore halacha lemaisa, he went ahead and he taught, go ahead and learn Mishnah. I will say, take a look at the top Rashi on Lamed Gimel Amud Beis. It's incredible Rashi. Bimei Rebbe Nishnas Mishnah. So Rashi says, Hadik Tani Gemara in Lechamid Gidol Mizo Lefi Shemishirabu Tamidei Shamai VeHilal Shahayu Lefan of Shlosha Doros Rabu Machlokes BaTorah. I will say, now watch this. Before, this is very important. Machlokes in Klal Yisrael. I don't mean like fighting. I mean Machlokes in Halacha began with the students of Hillel and Shammai. Not Hillel and Shammai themselves. Hillel and Shammai only had very few defined machloksim. There was a proliferation of machlokes by the students of Hillel and Shammai. And in fact, the Gemara says, Nasu kishtei toros. It's almost as if there was a Torah of Shammai and a Torah of Hillel. To the point, by the Rabbi say that the students of Shammai would not marry into the families of the students of Hillel, and vice versa, because each one thought the other were genealogically unfit based on just their interpretations. So they both say, when there are two Torahs in Klal Yisrael, this is an existential threat to the continuity of Klal Yisrael. So watch this. What happens? Meaning Rashi says, now why did all this happen? Mitoch ol shibur malchios ugziros shegozer aleihen. Umitoch kach lo hayucholin lasei slave levar divrei acholkim ad yamav shel Rebbe. So we'll say, now watch this. Now the Gemara Rashi says all of this is a result of persecution. There was so much persecution. That's why, again, historically, it's important to understand when all of this is happening. There's so much persecution. This is the time, this is the era before the destruction of the Second Beis HaMikdash. There's so much persecution. So because there's so much persecution, there's not clarity of mind to establish halacha. So therefore, I will say, again, literally, it was like there are two different Torahs. Until the days of Rebbe. Comes Rebbe Hudana, the days of Rebbe. Shanasana Kadosh Baruch Hu lo chein, be'ine Antoninos Melech Romi. Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, Rebbe, had a special relationship with the Caesar Antoninus. As Kedamina Ba'avod Zara, V'nochu Mitzara, V'shalach, V'kibes Kol Tamidi Eretz Yisrael, V'ad Yomav Lo Hayu Mesechto Sturos. So we'll say, listen to this. So during the days of Rebbe, because he had a good relationship with the Caesar, there was a little bit of a respite from persecution. What did Rebbe do with the respite from persecution? He gathered all the Tamidi Chamim Eretz Yisrael. And he said, guys, well, he didn't say guys. But he said, Chevra, we have to get organized. So what did he do? So he says, Ad yamav lo hayu mesechtos turos. Until the days of Rebbe, Rabbi said, they were not organized mesechtos, like we have them, rather. Elakol tamid sheshama davar mepi gadol himenu garsa, v'nasni simanam alocha plonus uplonus shamati misham, uploni ushkeneskabtsu amar kol echad masha shama, this is incredible. So what happened? We'll see. There were no organized mesechtos. So what happened? This one knew these halachas. Rebbe gathered everyone. And Rebbe said, okay, everyone share what you know. Everyone shared their information. And Rebbe organized all of the halachos into mesechtos. He organized everything into tractates, into orders. The Sidra Masechtos, Divrei Nezikin Levadam, Divrei Yevamas Levadam, Divrei Karchim Levadam, Ustam Nami B'Mishnah Divrei Yechidin. So we'll say Rebbe organized the Mishnah. Rebbe organized all of the halach, as we, everything we have today, the order that we have today, all the different orders, Rebbe did that. He goes on, he says, Shera Rebbe, and Rose, sometimes Rebbe put a halacha, a statement in the Mishnah without attribution. Now, why does Rebbe make a statement? Why did Rebbe put a statement in the Mishnah without attribution? To show you that what? To show you that it was authoritative. It was absolutely authoritative. He goes on, he says, V'sharing stam kidei likvo halacha kimosel nefichach anu v'gimara ein lechamidah gidol mizo shiyitnu leif tamei Mishnah. So we'll say, now watch this. So Rebbe is the one who organized the Mishnah and the Gemara, as we have it in tractates, as we have it. So Rebbe says, so what happens? So Rebbe organizes. Rebbe says, by the way, I just want to point out, Rebbe did this. Rebbe says, this goes back to what we learned on Shabbos morning together, the Medrash that says, Ish Yehudi, Al Tikri Yehudi, El Yechidi. Rebbe spoke on the Shabbos morning, El Yechidi. Rebbe says, great things do not happen through collaborative group endeavors. Great things happen because of the courage of individuals who then get the group involved afterwards. And they'll say, Rebbe did this. Now, truth is, we'll say, we're going to do a shir on this. This is really going to do a shir on, right? Because we'll say, there's a lot of history involved in this. There's like a lot of Jewish history in this about Rebbe, Antoninus, what's happening all around over here. But again, I will say, this is it. So therefore the Gemara says, there is nothing greater than Gemara, because Gemara has everything. It has the organized Mishnayos, it has the organized topics, and it also has all the organized reasoning. But Rabbi said, but then what happened? When people started learning Gemara, they had forsaken the study of Mishnah. So then Chazal said, okay, let's swing the pendulum back. We can't allow Mishnah to be forgotten, so let's go back and learn Mishnah as well. Let's say, okay, we're almost out of time. I just want to point out there's a tremendous Musar Haskil on this. The tremendous Musaska business, I will say, is that the beauty of Yiddishkeit, you know, on one hand, the strength of Yiddishkeit is that it's immutable. Like, the Taryag Mitzvos are the Taryag Mitzvos. That is it. There's not a 614th, there's not a 612th, right? There's not, oh, this one no longer applies, this one does apply. Mitzvos are Mitzvos, Shulchan Aruch, Shulchan Aruch. That being said, an approach to learning, an approach to Yiddishkeit. So Rabbi said, that does change with the times. And part of the beauty of us as a people is the ability to adapt to the times, is the ability to recognize that maybe once what once worked once upon a time may not work now. So again, once upon a time, Gemara, 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 Gemara. Then what happened? Mishnah was being forgotten. Okay, guys, Chevra, let's swing the pendulum back. Let's go to Mishnah. And then Rabbi said, where does the pendulum end? It ends off somewhere in the middle. So we'll stop over here for today. I promise the incredible. I promise the incredible. I will say, and again, we didn't even get to everything today. And Mirat, I will say, tomorrow we're going to start at 3:30 in the morning. We will be, I will say, Shkoyach, what a way to start the week. I will start it already yesterday. I will say, tremendous. Shkoyach, everyone.